Hello. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Tom Lane with Sabbath Bible Study. We recently considered the biblical concept of Thanksgiving and why Thanksgiving is important in our life and how an attitude of Thanksgiving will lead us to this future time of happiness, which we think of as the kingdom of God. As we look at Thanksgiving and we look around the world in which we live, it's easy to ask the question, why is the world so messed up? It seems no matter wherever we look, the world is in difficulty. We take a look at people who are not satisfied with the government that is ruling over them. There are ongoing riots in Hong Kong. People are concerned about the rule of the government over them in Hong Kong. Legitimately, the government is concerned about the uprising of the people. We look at what's happening in Iran with protests over recent spikes in gasoline prices. The gasoline prices over there, according to the news reports, jumped up about 50%, and there's now rationing on gasoline. So people's expectations have been dramatically changed in Iran, and they're not satisfied and happy with the government. And again, the government is very concerned because the people are protesting. The people of Bolivia had a huge uproar recently because there was election meddling, something that in the United States we are continually reminded of from the 2016 presidential election. And in Chile, people are concerned about economic injustice. Adding to the concerns around the world, in the United States, with the 2020 presidential election looming, we have one of the presidential candidates suggesting an income tax rate that would effectively tax people more than 100% of their income. The actual number that could affect some people would be as high as 158%. The good news for people like me, who is middle class, is that tax rate would not apply. But it would definitely apply to the people who are super rich, who generally are generous and donate money. And so there's concern about that. Beyond the politics and the economics of our society are the natural disasters. As I'm recording this sermon, there are floods in Venice, and the television scenes are incredible. People are walking atop what looks like tables and platforms erected in the middle of flooded areas so that they don't have to wade through water quite so deeply. In Australia, there are huge wildfires that seem to be consuming thousands and thousands of acres and hundreds of homes. And the same is said here in the United States of California, where hundreds and hundreds of homes seem to be burning up with thousands and thousands of acres on fire. We live in a world that seems to be so messed up. My belief is that the reason the world is so messed up is, as a society, we have rejected God. We tend to think of ourselves as a very God-fearing society, and so when the suggestion is made that we have rejected God, that's often met with skepticism. There are many areas in which we have rejected the teachings of the Bible that directly relate to the kinds of issues that we see today. Let's begin by taking a look at the economic concerns that we have today, where the richer seem to be getting richer, the poorer seem to be getting poorer. There's a biblical basis for that. And one of the areas we're going to take a look at is a concept that is taught in the Bible called the Jubilee Year. The Jubilee Year is mentioned in the Old Testament. It gets very little mention in the New Testament. Let's take a look at Leviticus chapter 25, beginning with verse 8. That's Leviticus chapter 25, verse 8. And thou shalt number 7 Sabbaths of years unto thee, 7 times 7 years, and the space of the 7 Sabbaths of years shall be unto thee 49 years. Then shalt thou cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month. In the Day of Atonement ye shall make the trumpet sound through all your land. incredible as it may sound, on the most solemn day of the year, on the Day of Atonement, the Jubilee trumpet was to sound. A very special occasion, marking a very special year with very special properties. If we were able, as a society, to live by God's law and implement the Jubilee year, we would find that many of the economic woes that are problematic in the modern era would go away. Let's look at verse 10. And you shall hallow the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. It shall be a jubilee unto you, and you shall return every man unto his possession, and you will return every man unto his family. A jubilee shall that 50th year be unto you. Ye shall not sow, neither reap that which groweth of itself in it, nor gather the grapes in it of thy vine undressed. For it is the jubilee. It shall be a holy unto you. Ye shall eat the increase thereof out of the field. The Jubilee year was a year of liberty. It was a year of liberty because it relieved the burden of oppression on the people. When people are protesting economically about how their government is treating them, when politicians are suggesting taxes on the very wealthy that is as much as 158% of income, those are all indications that economically the most of the people are being oppressed. The Jubilee year was designed to totally change that. It's ignored by people today because people have rejected God. The Jubilee year was a year when farmers would not harvest the crops in the field. They would not sow crops. They would not harvest what grew wild of its own accord. The people would rely on God to provide from previous harvests. Let's continue in verse 13. In the year of the Jubilee, you shall return every man unto his possession. And if thou sell aught unto thy neighbor, or buyest aught of thy neighbor's hand, ye shall not oppress one another. According to the number of years after the Jubilee, thou shalt buy of thy neighbor, and according unto the number of years of the fruits he shall sell unto thee. According to the multitude of years, thou shalt increase the price thereof, and according to the fewness of years, thou shalt diminish the price of it. For according to the number of years of the fruits doth he sell unto thee. The concept of the Jubilee was that no one would permanently own property. It was the great equalizer of wealth, understanding that some people would better manage wealth than other families. The Jubilee restores wealth in a controlled and predictable manner. And these verses talk about returning previously owned property to the original property owner. In verses 14, 15, and 16, we talk about the equity of how property is traded. And that's an easy way to think of the Jubilee principle, that property is not permanently sold. It's more like it's traded on a short-term basis of 50 years. And for most of us, 50 years would be most of our lifetime. People are lucky if they come to one Jubilee in their lifetime. They would be exceptionally lucky to see two Jubilees in their lifetime, and that would be highly unlikely, just depending upon the circumstances of their birth. The further away from the Jubilee year you sold property, the higher asking price would be expected because the person who bought the property would be able to harvest from the land many more years. The closer that we came to the Jubilee year, the lower the price would be because there would be less opportunities to harvest. The idea of not permanently owning land is very foreign to most people in the world today. In the United States, when people buy property, the concept is it's deeded to you until you no longer own it. And it's a voluntary choice on your part when you no longer own it. That is not the case, though, in all parts of the United States. For example, in the state of Hawaii, it is common for some property to be bought on what is called a leasehold provision. And the leasehold provision is similar in nature to the Jubilee principle of the Old Testament. At the end of the leasehold, the property reverts to the property owner. And if you wish to retain possession of the property, you renegotiate the leasehold in some properties in Hawaii. So the leasehold provision is similar in concept, but not exact to the Jubilee concept of the Old Testament. Moving on to verse 17, "You shall not therefore oppress one another, but thou shalt fear thy God, for I am the Lord your God." In the time of buying and selling in the Old Testament, there would be people who would take advantage. If a person would know that somebody desperately needed a piece of property and it was very close to the Jubilee year, they might be tempted to sell that property for much, much more than they should. God tells us not to oppress one another, but to be fair in our transactions. Verse 18, "Wherefore ye shall do my statutes and keep my judgments and do them, and ye shall dwell in the land of safety. And the land shall yield her fruit, and ye shall eat your fill and dwell therein safety. And if ye shall say, what shall we eat the seventh year? Behold, we shall not sow nor gather in our increase. Then I will command my blessing upon you in the sixth year, and it shall bring forth fruit for 3 years. And ye shall sow the eighth year, and eat yet of old fruit until the ninth year, until her fruit come in, and ye shall eat of the old store." God promises his blessings for obedience. The frustrating part for people who want to obey God today is most of this world will not obey God. Most people will look at a concept like the Jubilee year. Many people are aware of the Jubilee year, and most people will simply reject it as impractical. Let's look at verse 23. "The land shall not be sold forever, for the land is mine. For ye are strangers and sojourners with me. And in all the land of your possession ye shall grant a redemption for the land. If thy brother be waxen poor and hath sold away some of his possession, and if any of his kin come to redeem it, then he shall redeem that which his brother sold. And if a man have none to redeem it, and himself be able to redeem it, then let him count the years of the sale thereof, and restore the overplus unto the man to whom he sold it, that he may return it unto his possession. But if he be not able to restore it to him, then that which is sold shall remain in the hand of him that hath bought it until the year of the Jubilee, and in the Jubilee it shall go out and shall return unto his possession." People lose property for many different reasons. I live in the state of Texas, for example, and in the state of Texas, like most states, if you do not pay your property taxes, the government can come in and sell your property to recover those property taxes. Much like if you have a mortgage on your property and you fail to make mortgage payments in a timely manner, at some point the mortgage company will be able to foreclose on the property and take possession of your property so that they can recover part of their loss. The biblical principle of redemption is very similar to a law that exists in Texas. If somebody loses their property through a tax sale, they have the right to redeem the property for a certain amount of time. And if they redeem it, then the property goes back to that original property holder. There are many principles in modern finance and property codes that go back to what was taught in the Bible. What's unique in verse 28 is the reference to the year of Jubilee, that at the Jubilee, all property reverts back to the original property owner. That's something we don't have. Imagine what would change if that were to happen. when we have a politician that is suggesting a 158% income tax on the super rich of the United States, that's an indication and a recognition that financially our society is out of whack, that things are very weird, and something dramatic needs to happen. Well, the dramatic thing that needs to happen is not some socialist economic policy. We instead, as a country, need to return to what is taught in the Bible. And if we were to do that, our economic problems would go away. Let's look at verse 29. And if a man sell a dwelling house in a walled city, then he may redeem it within a whole year after it is sold. Within a full year may he redeem it. And if it be not redeemed within the space of a full year, then the house that is in the walled city shall be established forever to him that wrought it through his generations. It shall not go out in the jubilee. A difference is when a house that was simply there for a space to live, like the house I live in, if it was sold, you always have the right to buy it back within a year. But if you didn't buy it back within a year, and it was a residential house within a walled city, there was no right of redemption in the Jubilee. That was one of the exceptions from the Old Testament. The urban areas were an area for economic prosperity and exempt from the Jubilee. Verse 31, but the houses of the villages which have no wall round about them shall be counted as the fields of the country. They may be redeemed, and they shall go out in the Jubilee. A difference, the small towns could be redeemed and go back in the Jubilee, whereas in the big cities that were walled, the Jubilee did not apply. Verse 32, notwithstanding the cities of the Levites and the houses of the cities of their possession, may the Levites redeem at any time. And if a man purchase of the Levites, then the house that was sold in the city of his possession shall go out in the year of the Jubilee. For the houses of the cities of the Levites are their possession among the children of Israel. But the field of the suburbs of their cities may not be sold, for it is their perpetual possession. Let's look at verse 35. And if thy brother be waxen poor and fallen in decay with thee, then thou shalt relieve him, yea, though he be a stranger or a sojourner, that he may live with thee. Take thou no usury of him or increase, but fear thy God, that thy brother may live with thee. Thou shalt not give him thy money upon usury, nor lend him thy victuals for increase. I am the Lord your God, which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt, to give you the land of Canaan and to be your God. In any society, there are poor people. Jesus in the New Testament said, the poor you will have with you always. The economic philosophies taught to us in working with people who are poor, who are disadvantaged, are given to us in verses 35 through 38. Notice verse 36, we're not to charge them usury or interest. One of the most egregious ways that people who live paycheck to paycheck are victimized are through the so-called payday loans, where what seems like a very innocent rate of interest with fees and reapplication fees suddenly spirals into this huge, ridiculously high interest rate that would be out of reach for even the most ultra-wealthy unless they pounced on it right away and took care of that debt. That's an unfortunate way how people victimize people who are poor. In verse 37, we're not even to lend somebody something with the idea of making a profit on it. I think in terms of leasing items, you can go to a store and certain stores, and instead of buying furniture, you can lease furniture. So even in those circumstances with leases, we're not to be making profit on people who are poor. Now, it doesn't say in verse 37 that we have to give away everything for free. The concept is we can't do this for increase. We can't do this to make money. It would be okay to recover costs. That's not being talked about in verse 37. To do something that costs is not a matter of discussion. The matter of discussion is don't victimize somebody who's down and out on their luck. That's the concept that we're being taught. It's okay to expect that person to provide their fair share without victimizing them to make a profit. That's the difference. Let's look at verse 39. And if thy brother that dwelleth by thee be waxen poor and be sold unto thee, and right away we think, whoa, slavery existed in Israel, and according to this verse, of course it did. There's no way to get around those verses. But how are we to treat people who are down and out in their luck? It's illegal to be put in prison because you're a debtor in the United States. Maybe in the country you live in, maybe you could be put in prison because you're a debtor. And in certain countries, especially some in the Middle East, you can be put in prison for being in debt and not taking care of your debts. But in the United States, that would be illegal. But let's look at verse 39. Somebody who sold unto you a slave, thou shalt not compel him to serve as a bond servant. If a bad financial situation happens, we are not to treat somebody as a slave. That shows us that God is not for slavery. Instead, in verse 40, we're to treat people who we come across as a hired servant and as a sojourner. He shall be with thee, and he shall serve thee unto the year of the Jubilee. So God did not dismiss that person from their responsibility to work for the person who they are now living with. There was simply a difference in understanding the relationship. And the difference in the relationship was somebody was to be treated as a hired servant. And in verse 41, then shall he depart from thee, both he and his children with him, and he shall return unto his own family, and unto the possession of his fathers shall he return. Stop and think, who serves as an employee for many, many, many years, and then after all those years are gone, they can leave? That describes somebody who is under contract. When I worked for the school districts, I was under a contract on a year-to-year basis. That's how Texas did it. Other states might provide a contract for a teacher for multiple years. And so for many, many years, the teacher would be responsible and required to work for the district that hired the teacher. Many high-paid executives work in multi-year contracts, and only after their contract is up are they free to leave on their own volition. Prior to that time, it requires a mutual agreement by both parties. Let's look at verse 42. For they are my servants, which I brought forth out of the land of Egypt. They shall not be sold as bondsmen. Thou shalt not rule over them with rigor, but shalt fear thy God. What the ancient Egyptians did to the children of Israel was of concern to God. And he does not want us to treat people as the ancient Egyptians treated the Israelites. Verse 44, both thy bondmen and thy bondmaids, which thou shalt have, shall be of the heathen that are round about you. Of them shall ye buy bondmen and bondmaids. With the children of ancient Israel, they were not to have slaves among their own people. The slaves that they could have were people who were the heathen, the pagans, who were not part of the children of Israel. In the modern era, God would have us look at all people as being God's children. Therefore, we don't look at slavery at all in the modern era. Verse 45, moreover, of the children of the strangers that do sojourn among you, of them shall ye buy, and of their families that are with you, which they begat in your land, and they shall be your possession. Again, a strange concept today. And you shall take them as an inheritance for your children after you to inherit them for a possession. They shall be your bondmen forever, but over your brethren, the children of Israel, you shall not rule one over another with rigor. Verse 47, and if a sojourner or stranger wax rich by thee, and thy brother that dwelleth by him wax poor, and sell himself unto the stranger or sojourner of thee, or to the stock of the stranger's family, after that he is sold, he may be redeemed again. One of his brethren may redeem him. Either his uncle or his uncle's son may redeem him, or any that is nigh of kin unto him of his family may redeem him. Or if he be able, he may redeem himself. And he shall reckon with him that bought him from the year that he was sold to him unto the year of the Jubilee, and the price of his sale shall be according unto the number of years, according to the time of an hired servant shall it be with him. And if there be yet many years behind, according unto them, he shall give again the price of his redemption out of the money that he was brought for. And if there remain but a few years unto the year of the Jubilee, then he shall count with him, and according unto his years, he shall give him again the price of his redemption. For people who found themselves financially in trouble, they could go under contract and work for another person who was of the children of Israel. And if they came into money, they could get out of their contract simply by buying the remaining terms of their contract. A very similar concept to how things would be done today. Verse 53, and as a yearly hired servant shall he be with him, and the other shall not rule with rigor over him in thy sight. And if he be not redeemed in these years, then he shall go out in the year of the Jubilee, both he and his children with him. For unto me the children of Israel are servants, they are my servants whom I brought forth out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. The Jubilee year was one financial way that we are ignoring God. And when we reject God financially, we create all sorts of financial problems. Another way how we reject God is by rejecting God's system of tithing. Let's take a look at Malachi 3, verse 8. We looked at this verse a few weeks ago. We'll take a look at it again. Malachi 3, verse 8. Will a man rob God? Yet ye have robbed me. But ye say, wherein have we robbed thee in tithes and offerings? Ye are cursed with a curse, for ye have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house, and prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts. If I will not open you the windows of heavens and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. And I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and he shall not destroy the fruits of your ground, neither shall your vine cast her fruit before the time in the field, saith the Lord of hosts. And all nations shall call you blessed, for you shall be a delightsome land, saith the Lord of hosts. Tithing in the Old Testament was an agricultural law. Let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 22. Thou shalt truly tithe all the increase of thy seed that thy field bringeth forth year by year. And thou shalt eat before the Lord thy God in the place which he shall choose to place his name there, the tithe of the corn, of thy wine, of thy oil, and the firstlings of thy herds, and of thy flocks, that thou mayest learn to fear the Lord thy God always. And if the way be too long for thee, so that thou art not able to carry it, or if the place be too far from thee, which the Lord thy God shall choose to set his name there, when the Lord thy God hath blessed thee, then shalt thou turn it into money, and bind up the money in thine hand, and shalt go out unto the place which the Lord thy God shall choose. And thou shalt bestow that money for whatsoever thy soul lusteth after, for oxen, or for sheep, or for wine, or for strong drink, or whatsoever thy soul desireth. And thou shalt eat there before the Lord thy God, and thou shalt rejoice, thou and thine household. And the Levite that is within thine gates thou shalt not forsake him, for he hath no part nor inheritance with thee. At the end of 3 years, thou shalt bring forth all the tithe of thine increase the same year, and shall lay it up within thine gates. And the Levite, because he hath no part nor inheritance with thee, and the stranger, and the fatherless, and the widow, which are within thine gates, shall come, and shall eat and be satisfied, that the Lord thy God may bless thee in all the work of thine hand which thou doest. Tithing is a biblical principle based on an agrarian model. How in 2019 do we take that agrarian model and apply it in the world today in a way that reflects the intent of the Bible? An agrarian model, tithing was required on the increase of thy seed. The farmer would take seed, sow it into the ground, and on the increase, they would tithe. There was also the requirement to tithe on the increase of the herds and the flocks as well. Aside from the agrarian requirement for tithing, there is no mention of a need to tithe on the making of items, say taking pieces of wood and turning them into furniture. No requirement on that increase, what we would call something value added today. The tithe was on the base item, the agricultural crop, the animals. It did not include the factor of increasing the value of something, food manufacturing, and selling it. How do we take tithing and apply it in 2019 when most of us are not farmers or ranchers? Let's look at Hebrews chapter 7 to get some suggestions, some answers on how we could take a look at tithing. Hebrews 7, verse 1, we're talking about Melchizedek and the kingdom of Salem. Hebrews 7, verse 1, for this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him, to whom also Abraham gave a tenth part of all. First being of interpretation, king of righteousness, and after that also king of Salem, which is king of peace. So Abraham tithed to Melchizedek, giving him a tenth of a part of all. We know from the instruction of the children of Israel, it was a tenth part of the increase of the agricultural items. Verse 3, without father, without mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like unto the Son of God, abideth a priest continually. Now consider how great this man was, unto whom even the patriarch Abraham gave the tenth of the spoils. So now we know what Abraham gave a tenth of. Abraham did not give a tenth of everything that he had in his possession. He gave a tenth of the spoils of the plunder. And verily, they that are the sons of Levi, who receive the office of the priesthood, have a commandment to take tithes of the people according to the law, that is, of their brethren, though they come out of the loins of Abraham. But he whose descent is not counted from them received tithes of Abraham and blessed him that had the promises. And without all the contradiction, the less is blessed to the better. And here men that die receive tithes, but there he receiveth them of whom it is witnessed that he liveth. And as I may say so, Levi also, who receiveth tithes, paid tithes in Abraham. For he was yet in the loins of his father when Melchizedek met him. If, therefore, perfection were the Levitical priesthood, for under it the people received the law, what further need was there that another priest should rise up after the order of Melchizedek and not be called after the order of Aaron? For the priesthood being changed, there is made of necessity a change also of the law. With that concept in mind, we take a look at what Abraham tithed on. He tithed a tenth of the spoils. So what is a spoil? A spoil is what you get after, you know, you plunder somebody. We think in the terms of spoils as proceeds. I'm on the board of a nonprofit organization, and what's important to us is the proceeds we get after we have an event. Not all that we get for an event is proceeds. Even though we're a nonprofit organization, we have our expenses too, and the proceeds are what is left after the expenses. And when Abraham tithed on the spoils, the spoils were what was left after the expenses were met. Abraham had people who went with him to go to war with these kings. These people had to be compensated for their service. Not everything that we get is profit. And that's a big concept that is overlooked. When people think about tithing, they wonder what should they tithe on. Should they tithe on their gross paycheck? Should they tithe on their net paycheck? The biblical requirement for tithing is increase. And I don't know if somebody's gross paycheck is increase, if somebody's net paycheck is increase, or if some other measure needs to be used for increase. I think it's more important for each individual to take a look at their circumstances to determine what their increase is, and then to be faithful in the application of whatever that increase may be. For instance, many people need a vehicle to commute to and from work. Without that vehicle, they have no job, they have no source of income. Other people might have uniforms that they are required to maintain for work. If they do not wear those uniforms, there is no job for them. Yet others may be required to maintain professional credentials beyond the work to maintain their work. To say that gross income or net income is your increase is an arbitrary decision that may not apply in each individual situation. When we look at tithing from the Old Testament, it was an agricultural model, one that focused squarely on the increase of crops in the land and the increase among the flocks and the herds of the animals. In the Old Testament, tithing is based on agriculture, an increase in the crops of the field, an increase among your herds and your flocks. What about the farmer who sold real estate before the Jubilee? Was there a tithe on that transaction? There's no record of that in the Old Testament. What about an artisan living in a city who made a clay pot and sold the clay pot? Was there a need to tithe on that? There's no record of that in the Old Testament. The Old Testament, when it talks about tithing, it's simply a book about agricultural tithing, the increase of the crops of the field, the increase of the animals in our flocks. There is no record of financial transactions for a basis of tithing. We know from the book of Malachi chapter 3, the question, will a man rob God? And then God tells us that men rob God all the time through tithes and offerings. And as I shared in a recent week, that I happen to personally believe that many priests rob men in the name of God. That priests also do many unspeakable other things in the name of God with adults and children in their congregations. There are many who call themselves, you know, Church of God, who will give a directive of how to tithe. Tithe on your gross pay. Tithe on your net pay. What I will share with you is tithe on your increase. I can't tell you what your increase is. I can tell you that would be the expectation. It's important for each of us to prayerfully take it to God to determine what increase is in our life and in our financial circumstances. And then we need to tithe on that increase. What is the tithe used for? If we look at Deuteronomy 14, there are some people within the churches of God that would look at Deuteronomy 14 as solely a second tithe and also introducing a third tithe. So 20%, 30%. I'm not sure that that's what Deuteronomy 14 is talking about. I believe part of the basis for that is looking at verse 23, the reference 2, thou shalt eat before the Lord thy God in the place which he shall choose to place his name there, from the practice of having big feasts of tabernacle sites, and people would travel to those locations. Verse 23 is simply a reference and a reminder that we are to worship God wherever God would have us worship him. There was a requirement on the children of Israel when they went into the promised land that they were not to put a temple at any old location, but just the location where God wanted him to be worshiped. That's what verse 23 is talking about. So when I look at this, I see one tithe. And I see one tithe used to handle many different concepts. Let's take a look at verse 27. It's to take care of the Levite that is within thy gates. We know that the Levitical priesthood is no longer in effect, so we know that tithes can be used to handle people who are handling priestly duties. We know that tithes can also be used, looking at verses 28 and 29, to take care of the stranger, the fatherless, the widows. That's how we use tithes. And we also use it, if we take a look at verse 26, that we use it for the family's need to worship God. Today we began looking at the concept, why is the world so messed up? And looking at the notes for today's sermon, I see that I barely got through the first little part of it, so we'll continue this concept next week and maybe even the week thereafter. We looked at the Jubilee year. One of the reasons the world is so messed up is because we ignore the requirement for the Jubilee year that every 50 years, essentially debts are canceled, property is reverted back to its original owner in most cases. We also took a look at tithing and that in the Old Testament, tithing was an agricultural model and that there remains a need for us to tithe on our increase. And we also examined that exactly what our increase is not something that can be clearly defined by somebody else who doesn't know our financial circumstances. The world is messed up for many different reasons. But when we take a look about the financial injustices of the world, where we have the super rich, the 1%, and just about everyone else controlling a very tiny sliver of the world's economy, it's because this world, a long time ago, chose to ignore God, chose to rebel against God, chose not to follow God's way of life. The economy we have and the financial consequences that we have are a result of that decision. The way to begin restoring economic prosperity so that all can benefit from economic prosperity is not through some government form of socialism. It's not through some government form of capitalism or communism. No ism is going to help us get to that point from a political or economic standpoint. We have to return to God's way of life that revolves financially around recognizing the Jubilee year and recognizing the need to tithe on our increase. Thank you for joining us today. God willing, we'll get together next week on the Sabbath. Until next time, thank you for joining us today.